Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 29 of Gaming My Whole Life, where we talk games, follow the industry, and geek out from pixels to now. Today is a solo podcast. Jamel won't be joining us, but there's some exciting news I would like to share. You may already know if you hang around my Facebook page or group, but to everyone else, I'm happy to announce that very shortly you will be able to geek out with me on YouTube. The channel will be called Positive Gaming Space, as I feel that sets a more clear tone as who I am as a person. This will all be taking place on September 6th, which is this Thursday. I will be uploading my first video. This will allow me to reach even more wonderful gamers such as yourself. I feel this may be the limit of how far I branch out though, making clever game articles for the Facebook page, moderating the Facebook group daily, this podcast, and now a YouTube channel is already entering full-time commitment waters, and I don't make money from this, so it does take a fair bit of commitment. Of course, I'm happy to do all this, and it all started with you. This podcast was the first step of many, and I am blown away by just how many downloads I get each episode. Rest assured, these expansions will not, and I repeat, will not come at the cost of interrupting this wonderful podcast series. You can always depend on me. With all that said and done, let's jump to this week's topic. This week's topics I am titling Game Expectations Ruined by DLC or Patches. This is a fun thing to talk about because we all have expectations of what we want from our games. Part of these expectations come from the games that come out right now. Say a game comes out tomorrow, you know roughly what to expect. If it's an RPG, you know how many hours you can expect. You know what sort of graphics are reasonable in a first-person shooter, and how many game delays are acceptable, if at all. There's another factor though, which can have an even larger influence on our gaming expectations, and that's from games of past. Depending on age, you may have started gaming while 2D graphics were still state of the art. Maybe you started at the birth of 3D, a very exciting time. Or maybe you entered gaming when HD was a standard, so you have no idea what blurry pixels is. Is that your loss? No, I wouldn't say that. It's good to be a gamer at any time, so no bias here. Either way, these early years of gaming taught you what to expect and what you deemed as value for money. Personally, I started with the original Nintendo, and I've never stopped gaming ever since. I've watched game genres change alongside with me, as well as expectations and the budgets which these games run off. Some areas of gaming have improved, and others, in my opinion, haven't improved. Either way, let's have a fun chat about that. Now, let's discuss fighting games. As I feel that's an easy genre of gaming to understand, you normally play as a man or woman, and you beat each other up. Pretty simple, it's fun, you have 5, 10, 20, whatever amount of players each time, and graphics get prettier and more realistic as we move forward. So Tekken 2 looked better than Tekken 1, Mortal Kombat 2 looked better than Mortal Kombat 1. And Street Fighter 2 looked better than Street Fighter 1, and so forth. I think you can figure out where I'm going with this. Now, let's look at Tekken and Street Fighter. These are two names which you most likely are familiar with. Even if you don't play them, you know of their existence. Going way back on the original PlayStation, Tekken 1, Tekken 2, and Tekken 3 was released. You started with a certain amount of characters, and by completing the main story with each available character, slowly but surely, you unlocked even more fighters to enjoy. This encouraged you to get the maximum amount of playtime, as you had to learn every fighter's moves to complete the story. Every fighter had their own endgame CG cutscene, which was really cool, so you'd beat the 10 or 12 normal fighters you had to deal with, you'd then beat the boss, and you'd get a cutscene. So if you beat the game with a character called Blue, you would see Blue's cutscene. You would find out a little bit about their past or history or why they're even there, because even though fighting games aren't heavily designed around story, we don't want to be controlling empty people, empty vessels. We want to reason, why is he fighting? Why is she fighting so hard? Really adds depth to the experience. It was also rare that there were any bugs with these games, because this was before the internet. So you only had one shot, one opportunity. That was it. If you launched a game and it wasn't up to scratch, word spread. People didn't say, oh, the game isn't good right now, it's just not good. That was the final verdict. That was the coffin in the nail. That was the negative reviews you see online. Now, let's magically teleport to the current, which is 2018. All games can connect to the internet. Budgets are sky high, it's like ridiculous, and graphics can border on realism, and day one patches are a norm for pretty much any company. So before we decide on what we should expect from a fighter in 2018, let's look at what we get for the most part in a typical fighter. You get stunning graphics, you get jaw-dropping moments, and even the clothing and the hair of fighters have their own physics. It's a big deal. Clothes can be torn, bruises can appear, and even sweat dripping down their faces. How amazing is that? I was playing Dead or Alive. I was playing a demo of one of the more recent ones, and I was blown away by the visual quality of the game. If you could actually see sweat dripping down their faces, the hair would fly all over the place, the clothing, it was everything that you expected a fighter to be. And this was all happening at like a really fast 60 frames per second, this and that. It was so smooth, it really felt like fighting games are where they should be. Now, the internet has brought some fantastic advantages to us. Additional features can be put in, additional game modes, improvement to how a game plays. I mentioned 60 frames per second because a lot of people seem to like that number. Personally, I'm good with 30, but that's my preference. Now, say you're targeting 30 frames per second or 60, doesn't matter which, but the game actually struggles to keep up with that. It says 60 frames per second, but it actually borderlines between, I don't know, 45. So that's obviously not 60. Developers can release patches that improve how everything runs, and then all of a sudden, instead of getting a game that's meant to be 60 frames per second and running at 45, maybe they can improve it to hit 60 later on, or at least a 55 or something. Just makes a smoother experience, and it's nice that it's even an option. Additional fighters can be added as DLC as well, so a single game can stay feeling fresh for quite a while, because yeah, back in the day when you bought a game and you played through all the characters and you were done with it, that was it. The only way you could further the experience is, I don't know, playing it on the hardest difficulty setting, getting friends over to play with you. If you are so good you destroy the computer, maybe break your own record. Eventually you ran out of things to do, whereas these days, I just hit a glass of water, my apologies. But these days, you get more characters. Say every month you get one new character. And that's pretty cool. That is awesome. If you're still enjoying the game, power to you. And yeah, that's something which Capcom does a lot. Most of the fighting games do it, but Capcom especially. They will continuously be releasing new characters, and I think that's a good thing. The issue with these online connectivities and DLCs, as fantastic as they are, because it adds more content. Let's break it down. A game comes out, and then you can add more to the game. What could possibly be wrong with that? Well, the issue is no one governs the behavior of game publishers, and anything goes. I'll use the last Street Fighter game that came out. It launched with no story mode. I'm not even joking, it was brought in later, but that didn't stop Capcom from at the time still charging you full price for an incomplete game. Is it wrong that I expect a playable story mode on day one with a fighting game? The simple fact is, Capcom did it because they could. No one is in a position to step in and slap them on the back of the head for trying to pull a dodgy. Now at the time, Capcom did take advantage of player expectations, because my expectations are not the same as yours, and especially different to a much younger gamer whose early childhood memories may be buying fighting games with characters locked behind a DLC screen, and as such, is used to never really buying a complete game to begin with. Let's have a look at another fighting franchise, which I love, mind you, and that is Mortal Kombat. I think Mortal Kombat is such an amazing franchise. I've had so much fun. They've had their ups and downs, but for the most part, they've been consistently entertaining. They did, however, release a game where Goro was behind a DLC, and okay, so what's wrong with that, you may ask? Shouldn't developers get paid for the extra work they do? Absolutely, they should. If they put extra work, they should get paid. That's not even up for discussion here. However, this was not extra work. It was discovered that Goro was already on the disc, already created, so no extra work had to be done, but you had to pay extra money simply to unlock him. That's too far. So this is where things start to get a bit sticky. My expectations with DLC is you pay for the extra work done. The original game is still complete and nothing is missing. But if you want even more, you pay for it, and that's fair and that's fine. I feel each DLC character in any fighting game costs too much personally. I've seen it for as much as $10. I've seen it for more, I've seen it for a little bit less. We are talking an individual fighter, so at least minimum 6 extra characters will be added within the life cycle of a typical fighting game by today's standards, and 6 is a low number. They're normally more towards the 10 mark. And if you paid $10 individually for each fighter that came out, you were paying $60 to $100 more on top of the base game, which I don't think that's right. Personal feelings aside, I know to expect incomplete games from most developers and publishers these days. I know a fighting game will later launch with an ultimate version that includes all of the slowly released DLC characters at a cheaper price than if you bought them individually. I also know, even outside of fighters, not to buy a game day one. It could easily be buggy, broken, and needs a few patches before it plays as intended. That's the reality we sadly face, because other players enable this poor behavior. Why should they, and by they I mean publishers, change if the game still sells? There's plenty of gamers who go and pre-order games from publishers who always release a buggy product. They will be incomplete games, and the buyer will simply accept whatever state the game is in. Is it because they feel powerless as an individual, that them saying no and not buying a game until it's in a better state is meaningless? You are not alone and should always vote with your wallet. That's something I talk about very often on this podcast, and I know you agree because I see those downloads. I talk to you on Positive Gaming Space on Facebook. We are all connected, we all agree. Developers do what works for them, and it's not hard to change that. If a business tactic stops working, they change their tune and adapt a practice that works for them. They want to make money, it's not evil, but they do whatever works best. If what works best means delaying a game and only releasing it when it is a fine, smooth experience, that's what they're gonna do. They go where the money is. If the money is, like, let's take a look at some of Nintendo's practices. If you're a fan of this podcast series, you know I'm a big Nintendo fan, and there's reasons like this which I am. When a new Mario game comes out, when a new Zelda game comes out, Donkey Kong, Mario Kart, Metroid Prime, Smash Brothers, Yoshi, there is so many. When any of these games come out, you can still, even in 2018, pre-order the game without worry. The game will work as intended day one. The complete main game will be there. The game series have only grown in scope over the years. They haven't gone smaller. Does Nintendo add paid DLCs to their game? Yeah, they sure do. But they don't abuse it. Paid DLC comes out months after the release, because Nintendo is actually still working on it. It's not already done work that's just behind a paywall. It's real additional work the team does, and only then asks for money. You know what else? They always include free DLC. Nintendo released ARMS for the Nintendo Switch, and for a full year, maybe even more, kept giving us free fighters. They weren't asking for $10, free additional modes. They weren't asking for more money. Mario Odyssey, free updates all the time. When you get a complete experience with the game day one and are treated to freebies on the regular, by the time a paid DLC is offered, you're happy to pay it because you have been looked after by the company. No one wants to feel taken advantage of. And if you feel looked after, you are more than happy to part with some more of your hard-earned money. My gaming expectations from, say, Ubisoft or EA or Nintendo or CD Projekt are vastly different to each other. As such, certain companies get a lot more of my money because that is my expectation. That is what I stand by. And yes, I have had games which I was looking forward to, which looked great, which looked fun. And right before coming out, I found out there was forced paywalls, that what I would buy would be an incomplete product. And here's the thing, I am not used to that, nor do I ever want to feel that. You want to feel that when you own a game, when you buy a game, you get everything. Now, how could you possibly feel good buying a game and you're playing the game and there's literally areas that you can't access because you have to pay for it? And there's weapons that you can't use because you have to pay for it. I understand that games cost a lot more money. We're not silly. Gamers understand that games cost more money. But the publishers are taking advantage of that. Yes, it costs hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to make a big AAA game. Now, that just comes down to their management. These companies have been making games for years, and when I say years, I mean 10, 20, some in the 30 years. You need to better manage your funds and put the money where it belongs. Okay, so here's something which you never hear publishers talk about. Yes, games cost more money to make these days. They cost a ridiculous amount. They need to have a safety net to make sure they get their money back. They have investors to answer to. What you don't hear them say is that there is so much more gamers now than there was back in the day. Yes, development was cheaper during the Super Nintendo era, during the PlayStation, and even the PlayStation 2 era. Things really skyrocketed the moment we went to HD. But the amount of gamers available to buy games is astronomically larger. And also, during those times, the only way that developers could promote themselves was to spend a lot of money on advertisements, which they do now, right? But let's say that tomorrow Ubisoft shows off a game trailer, an amazing game trailer. It looks so good. The graphics are amazing. The gameplay is amazing. It's near completion, pre-order now. Let's do this. That would catch on fire and would be all over the internet. You would see it pop up on Facebook. You would see it pop up on the popular game websites like IGN and GameSpot and Game Informer and Polygon and all that. Word would catch on. So it's a lot easier to promote. You can get a lot more people on board, to the point which before Ubisoft released Watch Dogs, the first one, right? Before they released it, they had so many pre-orders. So when we're talking about pre-orders, we're talking about money put down on a game that has not come out yet. They had so many pre-orders that they deemed the Watch Dogs series a success and said they would release more. This was before the game even came out. This did not exist during the earlier periods, which developers are talking about saying it was so much easier to do it back then. Yeah, there was less risk, but you know what? There was a lot less reward. They make their money. Paid DLCs are not necessary, and they can be implemented in a way which it isn't such a smack to the face. So one example I will use is I was speaking to my coworker, and she has a young son, and he enjoys playing online video games just like anyone else. He was playing one of those first person shooters, he's running around doing his own thing, and he got his mum, so my coworker, to buy him the game for Christmas, which is what kids do when you have a birthday coming up, when Christmas is coming up, or any other event which involves you getting a gift, you get to excitedly tell your parent or parents to go buy me this game. And then that game needs to last you and entertain you and hold your interest until the next time they can buy you something, which probably isn't often unless you come from a very wealthy family. Me personally, I always got a game when it was my birthday or Christmas. So I would wait for like 6 month gaps at a time before getting games. And this little boy unfortunately has to face the reality that everyone online was kicking his little butt. And it's not because he is young and not a good player. It was because everyone else online could buy weapons that gave him an unfair advantage. So he wasn't fighting against players, he was fighting against wallets. He's a little kid who doesn't work. Why should he have to beg his mum to... Why should he have that disadvantage? He got the game, he should be on the same playing field as everyone else. And even me, as an adult, I can afford to buy whatever game I want. I can afford to buy whatever DLCs and add-ons and this and that. I have the money to do it because I budget. I don't make a lot of money, but I'm just smart with it. Well, I try to be responsible. Now, that doesn't mean that my money is there to be wasted. That doesn't mean that when I buy a game, I'm only buying part of the game. And if I want to be at the same level as other people play against online, I have to spend more money. That is rubbish. There are smarter ways to go about it. One, a DLC should never ever give an advantage in all these microtransactions. What DLCs should do is go back to what they originally were. See, you hear the word DLC these days and you're like, ugh, no. DLCs used to be cool. They expand games. They used to add more to the world. It was an exciting thing when a huge DLC would come out. But a DLC used to be a whole package. You used to get a lot with it. You'll get more. So if you're playing a first person shooter, there was a large single player campaign, a DLC would add more to the campaign. More stories, more weapons, more features, more improvements, just more. You felt the value for money, so you were happy to spend that extra dollar. But that's all slowly become, maybe you want a hot pink handgun. Pay an extra $5 for it. You want to be able to, with the graffiti can, just spray can, just graffiti your name somewhere. $5, $5, $5. Like all these little if you want extra money, you need to bring quality. That's all we ask. If more, I always talk about Nintendo, and I'm not going to go on about them anymore, because there is some other companies as well that do things better, like CD Projekt Red and a few other examples. If all developers took the same care that Nintendo did and those few others, I would spend twice the amount of money every year that I do on games. When a DLC came out, I wouldn't think about it twice. It would be, oh, nice. I like this game. It's been a few months. They're releasing more. All right, more of the game I like. This is a no-brainer. Whereas now I need to think about, what condition is this releasing in? What am I actually getting? Is all this artificial? Like, it boggles my mind. But again, it comes down to the fact that the industry is not monitored. Publishers can do whatever they want. It's up to us, the gamers, to put our foot down. And I feel the attitude of the gaming society is changing. I think even the younger gamers who originally didn't know any better, and they just jumped on board and they bought the DLCs and they didn't think about it because they didn't think about the consequence. That's where things come down to it, is the consequence. When DLCs first started coming in a different form, the original DLCs were fine. But when I slowly started to see these features come into my games, like, hey, if you want this, pay an extra $5, pay an extra $5. I would pit that $5 against the price of the whole product. So this podcast comes from Australia. When a new game launches on a video game console, it can be as much as $100. Yeah, I know, our tax here is really bad. Or you get the PC version, which is normally significantly cheaper. You can get that for $60, $70, $80, which is still a lot, but cheaper than the console part. Anyway, so let's say I pay $60 on a game. I buy it. I have, I don't know, 45 hours worth of gameplay, and I'm happy. And within that 45 hours, you have like 12 different weapons, 6 different enemies, 8 different maps, stages, worlds, whatever. And then later on, the developer's like, hey, I'm going to give you one extra enemy, one extra gun, and how about you pay $10-$15 for it? I would then grab that $10-$15 and pit it against what I paid for the original product. I'm like, hang on, for $60, I got a whole world. I got like 12 guns. I got this, I got that, and you want me to pay $15 for one part to get a very small upgrade? That's not on. I'm not going to stretch the point anymore. It's just, I expect better. And I know there's better because I talk to gamers such as yourself every day who feel just as passionate about it, and just make it worth our money. Gamers don't have a problem with spending money. Gamers spend a lot of money. If we have money and we know what games we want and we know those games are good, we are going to go out there and spend it. The only time we stop is because we need to research it online first. How buggy is it? How broken is it? Is it the complete game? If I buy this for my nephew, is he or she going to have a disadvantage because everyone else can buy better guns? Like, something needs to be done about this. That is my accidental rant. It wasn't meant to be a rant, but it's just turned out to be that way. So I bring the question to you. How do you feel as a gamer? If you're not a gamer and you listen to this podcast series, what are you doing? Become a gamer. How do you feel about this? Games keep coming out. You can buy DLCs, which I'm willing to accept DLCs as long as it's worth it. But what points have I missed out on here? What am I not considering? I'm sure there's more of a positive spin we can put on this. Or am I right on the mark here and developers need to do better? Okay, thank you for listening, guys. You have been listening to Gaming My Whole Life, episode 29. I will see you next time for episode 30, or maybe I'll see you on the YouTube channel, Positive Gaming Space, which launches on the 6th of September. Until next time, have a great day.